And this is the Law of the Case podcast for March 4th, 2024. Last week, we learned that the Supreme Court decided to take up the presidential immunity question in President Trump's January 6th case. The justices set oral arguments for April 22nd, and the expectation is that the court will decide the issue by the end of its term in June. There was a freak-out moment on the part of some pundits and commentators who were claiming that the Supremes were in the bag for Trump. The immunity question was, in their view, ridiculous, and all this was doing was delaying the trial to the point where it might not happen before the election. Here's a little sample of what Rachel Maddow said.
When you talk about the cravenness of the court, Chris, the cravenness of the court is evident in what they are doing with the pacing here, right? Like putting this off for 7 weeks, sitting on it for 2 weeks for no reason, obviously pushing all of the cases that they can push, pushing them to the point where Trump will be standing for election before any of us have heard the verdicts in any of those cases. Got it. It's the timing. But it's also the idea that the immunity thing is an open question. Right. So the idea that this has to be taken up is them saying the sky is green.
Right.
And I think even for the non-lawyers among us to be able to say, you know what, the sky is not green even on our worst day. This is BS. You are doing this as a dilatory tactic to help your political friend, your partisan patron. And for you to say that this is something that the court needs to decide because it's something that's unclear in the law is just flagrant bullpucky. And they know it, and they don't care that we know it, and that's disturbing about the future legitimacy of the court.
So flagrant bullpucky was the verdict by Rachel Maddow. And even on CNN, you had their legal analysts say this.
Former President Trump's effort to run the clock has a partner in the Supreme Court at this point, even though, Jake, probably in the end, the justices will agree with the D.C. Circuit and say and reject former President Donald Trump's claim of absolute immunity. But what good will that do for any kind of trial before we're really into the heat of this next presidential election?
And then there was Stephen Colbert. I include him because there are some folks who get their news from comedy shows. Let's see what he had to say about the Supreme Court's decision to take this issue on.
The Supreme Court has decided to hear Trump's immunity claim, further delaying his January 6th trial in the landmark case of People versus Do Laws Matter? Seriously, what is going on? Justice deferred is justice gutted like a fish and thrown into the river for chum. One more of these steaming turds, and I swear to God, on the ghost of John Marshall, I will drive to Washington and rub my ass on your gavel.
Now, it is this kind of news coverage and commentary that drove me to launch this podcast. It's such a disservice to the viewer because so much is being left out that you're left with a very mistaken view of the case. What am I talking about? Number one, did you know that there is another appeal in the Supreme Court that effectively is already holding up the January 6th trial till the end of the Supreme Court term? Number two, did you know that there is a Supreme Court decision from the 1980s that has already extended absolute presidential immunity from civil lawsuits? So there is some work to do to distinguish Trump's proposed immunity from criminal lawsuits from this binding precedent. Trump's immunity claim may not be right, but it's not crazy, and it may have a kernel of merit in it. Third, did you know that the special counsel himself had already suggested in December that the Supreme Court take up the immunity question because of its overriding importance? You would probably have missed these three important points had you been reading or watching most of the traditional news media last week. I'm Alex Grant with the Law of the Case podcast to help you understand that the Supreme Court's decision to hear this appeal is a little more nuanced than a cable news rant or a late night show punchline. I spent 23 years in the Department of Justice prosecuting nearly every type of criminal case the department handles. and I am currently an adjunct faculty member with the Western New England University School of Law. I am here to give you the straight scoop on the law, and I am afraid to I am unafraid to tell you when the emperor has no clothes. This podcast will cover the legal issues that journalists miss because they have never stood up in a courtroom, and I will explain the law without carrying the water for either political party. Now, before I get to the first point I made, that there's this other Supreme Court appeal that is holding up the January 6th trial, it is important to remember that every court to deal with these Trump cases, and the special counsel Jack Smith himself, they have all recognized that you cannot speed up the process for the purpose of getting the trial done before the November election. Jack Smith and his team have argued forcefully for speed, for trial dates as soon as possible, for expedited appeals processes. But not once have they tried to justify this need for speed in order to get any trial done, or at least started before the election. They've only made general arguments about the need for criminal cases in general to move along. The special counsel has not tried to make these election-related arguments because it would be improper to do so. It would be improper as a matter of Department of Justice policy to make decisions in a criminal case to influence an election. And it would be unpersuasive to any of these courts. It would be improper and ineffective. Now, Trump's lawyers, on the other hand, have tried to justify delay based on his need to campaign, based on his status as the presumptive Republican nominee. But they have gotten nowhere on that. On Friday, Trump's lawyer referenced his campaign in a hearing to talk about the trial schedule in the classified documents case. Now, Judge Cannon, the one in Florida, whom a lot of critics have said is biased in Trump's favor, she shut that down immediately. That's not to say Judge Cannon has not made any errors or that she has not made favorable rulings for Trump, but she was not going to listen to any argument from Trump based on the campaign. Judge Shutkin, the trial judge in the D.C. January 6th case, likewise rejected Trump's arguments based on his need to campaign. She said Trump had to face the criminal justice process just like anyone else. And in New York State, the Stormy Daniels hush money case is going forward this month in the middle of the Republican primary seasons. So courts have said we will not slow these prosecutions down in light of the upcoming election. And the special counsel has not dared to argue that we need to speed them up due to the elections. So the courts and the prosecutor, all of them sworn to seek justice, have to be agnostic about the election. It can't be a factor in scheduling anything. Now, does Jack Smith in his heart want to try one or both of his cases before November? Of course he does. But the courts have to be neutral. So what is this other Supreme Court appeal, and why was it already delaying the D.C. January 6th trial? It's not Trump's appeal, but the appeal of another of the hundreds of January 6th defendants. Joseph Fisher was one of the people who was charged with storming the Capitol, and he was accused of assaulting police officers. He was charged with obstruction of an official proceeding, 18 U.S.C. 1512 C2, among other crimes. But remember that section, 1512 C2. Fisher's argument was that assaulting people using violence was not covered by 1512 C2, because the statute has language about destroying or altering documents. And so he was arguing that the obstruction of an official proceeding had to be document-related. Now, the trial judge actually agreed with that argument and dismissed that count. The D.C. Court of Appeals disagreed and said that the obstruction statute was broad enough to capture acts like storming of the Capitol. And that question is now before the Supreme Court in this Fisher appeal. Now, here is the written order with the question that the Supreme Court has agreed to decide in Fisher. Did the D.C. Circuit err in construing 18 U.S.C. Section 1512C2, which prohibits obstruction of congressional inquiries, investigations, to include acts unrelated to investigations and evidence? That's the order from the Supreme Court agreeing to decide that question in Fisher. Now, here is the argument calendar with the Fisher case scheduled for April 16th, just a week before the Trump immunity appeal. So how does Fisher affect the Trump case? Well, here is the Trump indictment in the January 6th case. Now, take a look at the caption that I just showed you. The caption shows that there are four counts in the Trump indictment. And the third count is 18 U.S.C. Section 1512 C2, the same one in the Fisher case. And the second count is a conspiracy to obstruct under 18 U.S.C. 1512 that basically incorporates 1512 C2. So two out of the four counts in the Trump case are affected by this Fisher appeal. Not only is it the same statute in Trump and the Fisher cases, but the facts also track. Because remember, Trump is essentially being charged with being a leader of and an inspiration for that mob, which included Joseph Fisher, that engaged in assaultive, violent behavior on January 6th. So whether that kind of behavior is or is not covered by the statute, that would affect whether Trump could be found guilty under this statute, 1512 C2. So you might think that the TV networks and major newspapers might be expected to know this, but maybe it's too in the weeds for them. Except when the Fisher case was accepted by the Supreme Court in the fall, outlets like the Washington Post recognize that not only could the appeal affect a bunch of other January 6th defendants, it could also affect the Trump case. So here's the headline from the Washington Post indicating that this Fisher appeal could affect the Trump case. So the media knew about the importance of the Fisher appeal to Trump's case. And yet you have someone like Andrew Weissman on MSNBC, who is a former federal prosecutor, formerly on the Mueller investigation, saying stuff like this.
So there's just a lot of reasons to be very pessimistic, not maybe so much about the ultimate decision, but the ultimate decision is almost irrelevant, because even if they were to say that a president is not immune, by delaying it so much, they are de facto saying that this former president is immune, and they're essentially having a sort of a de facto veto on the grand jury process and the rule of law by just sitting on the case in the way they have.
Now, Weissman is the voice of reason on this panel, and here he is blaming the Supreme Court for de facto giving Trump immunity because the case won't be tried in time. But he has to know that the Fisher appeal is going to determine whether the government can pursue two out of the four counts in the indictment. That's half the case. There is no way you can do the trial on those counts until Fisher gets decided. Leaving out this other pre-existing reason for delay, especially as you're beating the drum about unconscionable delay, that's just bad journalism. A bad way of informing the public of what is going on in an important legal case. the Fisher appeal was already delaying the Trump case. That's not anyone's fault. But Jack Smith had to know that when he drew up the January 6th indictment against Trump last summer, using this 1512 statute, it was a potential legal risk. He was using a statute that does not have a long track record. It was passed in 2002 as part of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which actually deals with accounting and financial regulation. And there was a concern for Enron-style document shredding that could get in the way of financial investigations. So they put in this obstruction of justice provision. Now, could this statute be used to cover any kind of official proceeding for any kind of conduct that seemed obstructive? Well, I actually remember looking at this statute when I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office, when I was thinking about the kinds of crimes I could charge in one of my cases. I was looking at obstruction of justice statutes, and I looked at 1512c2 and thought by its language that it might be a general all-purpose obstruction of justice statute. But I looked at the text and the case law, and it seemed to be focused on documents and financial investigations. And I wasn't so sure, so I moved on. Now, I'm not saying that Jack Smith was wrong for charging it. He may well be proven right, and it would be a very useful criminal statute for federal prosecutors to address obstruction of justice if it's construed that broadly. I'm just saying that Jack Smith had to anticipate that he was not on entirely solid ground, and if he was focused on speed, charging this statute was a risk. So now we know that the January 6th case is being delayed not by one, but two Supreme Court appeals. Point number two, there is Supreme Court precedent giving former presidents absolute immunity from civil liability for official acts they took in office. Hardly anyone in the news media is acknowledging this in the coverage of the immunity argument. The case is Nixon v. Fitzgerald, decided in 1982. The Supremes said that the president, quote, is entitled to absolute immunity from damages liability predicated on his official acts, end quote. This was a sweeping decision, and it was premised on the need to keep the president from being too worried or too bogged down by fears of being sued when he leaves office, so he can take the actions necessary for the country while he's in office. Now, there is no specific immunity provision in the Constitution, but the Supreme Court found it implicit in the separation of powers and our legal history. Now, if I was Jack Smith, I would feel a lot better if Nixon versus Fitzgerald had been decided the other way. Nixon v. Fitzgerald is a point in Trump's favor. Nixon v. Fitzgerald is a minus, not a plus, to Jack Smith's position. He can explain it, he can distinguish it, but that case creates a little bit of headwind for the special counsel on the immunity issue. Now, that does not mean Trump's immunity argument is right. His extreme argument that basically any behavior is immune, including sending SEAL Team 6 to kill a political rival, unless he was also impeached and convicted by the Senate, frankly, that's crazy. That is not going to be what the Supreme Court holds. But the court is going to have to grapple with the fact that the same concern that led to Nixon v. Fitzgerald is at the heart of Trump's argument. The Trump team asked, well, could President Obama have been prosecuted for authorizing a drone strike? Do we want presidents worried about potential criminal liability for potentially being locked up after they leave office as they are making difficult decisions, sometimes without complete information, sometimes where there is time pressure, and sometimes where there are trade-offs between one course of action and another? Those questions do not admit of easy answers, and there are ways to distinguish the threat of civil liability and the threat of criminal liability. I'm not going to go into all of that, but as I say, the Supremes have some work to do in distinguishing Nixon v. Fitzgerald. And the final answer is unlikely to be one extreme or the other, no immunity versus absolute immunity. The Supreme Court, as it framed the question, which, by the way, was different from how both Trump and the special prosecutor framed it, was, quote, whether, and if so, to what extent does a former president enjoy presidential immunity from criminal prosecution, end quote. That to what extent language gives a hint that the court may decide to give some immunity for decisions like the drone strike example that is a good faith of effort to advance national foreign policy and refuse to give absolute immunity for literally any official act. Here's the other thing to keep in mind. Just because Trump's argument is extreme, that does not mean that it is wholly without merit. The law rarely deals in binaries, a world where one side is absurd and the other side is 100% correct. That is not how the law works. Judges love to tell lawyers that neither side is correct, that there is a better middle ground. The law lives in the layers. Arguments by lawyers have fallback positions. If you don't accept my first argument, then maybe the court will accept a lesser version of it. That happens in courtrooms around the country on every day of the week. Now, at the end of the day, this immunity argument may not help Trump escape criminal liability. A lot of what is alleged in the January 6th indictment seems to be actions by Trump as the candidate, not Trump as the president. Probably some of the alleged criminal acts are official acts, and others are not. So a ruling that gives each side a half a loaf, that is, immunity under some circumstances, but not others, might shield Trump for part of the indictment, but not enough to avoid conviction. The point, though, is that this immunity issue, putting aside Trump's extreme version of it, is a serious issue. And there's nothing to justify the diatribes by people like Maddow, who are portraying the Supreme Court's decision to take the case as some kind of unusual or corrupt or frivolous action. Now, finally, on my final and third point, Jack Smith himself had suggested the Supreme Court take the case in December. That was a calculated risk by the special counsel. His goal was speed. He wanted to bypass the D.C. Court of Appeals and get to the Supreme Court as soon as possible, because he figured the Supremes would weigh in on it anyway. Trump wanted to drag it out and wanted to go through both appeals processes. Had the Supreme Court granted Jack Smith's request, it would have been highly unusual. Skipping the Court of Appeals is almost never done. But it was a perfectly reasonable thing for him to do, to give it a try, if his goal was to get the case tried ASAP. The Supreme Court declined to depart from its usual practice, which I'm sure Jack Smith knew was a distinct possibility. Now, having urged the Supreme Court to take the case in December on the basis of it being such an important issue, the special counsel was at a disadvantage to argue in February that the Supreme Court should not take the appeal. That's part of what made the Supreme Court's decision to take this immunity appeal almost a foregone conclusion. So there you have it. A Supreme Court decision to take up an important issue in one of Trump's cases, a decision that is not the coming of Armageddon or proof positive of high-level corruption. If you want to keep learning about the stuff that traditional media sources leave out or get wrong, subscribe to this podcast. You can also find the podcast on Twitter at Law of the Case Pod, on Facebook, on YouTube, and you can email the show at lawofthecase@gmail.com. Until then, I am Alex Grant for the Law of the Case podcast.